Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
There you are, radar.
Hey, mail call.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and this is our annual mailbag episode where I go through all the listener comments that we got on the website and some emails and some iTunes reviews that we got for season 3 of the show. And of course, we'll be wrapping up with our traditional announcement about season 4, plus some other comments I have about season 3, the episodes we're going to go through. We're going to rank the episodes of season 3. That's always fun. So everybody strap in. We're going to go through the comments. Before we start, from the comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com, I want to do the iTunes or Apple podcast reviews. We've had a couple of new ones, and I really do appreciate that because, as we know, there's a couple of MASH podcasts out there, so every review helps. At least some do. Let's start off with the most recent one from Poiser. He says, "The Definitive Collection, 5 stars. With all due respect to other MASH podcasts and blogs, this is where the action is. If you were to assign an audio commentary to the complete DVD series, you could easily use the MASH cast and have all the details you need. It goes that deep and is that professional. Loretta Swit even guest hosted and asked to return. Looking forward to season 4. Well, thank you, Poiser. The idea that these could be used as commentary tracks, that's a huge compliment to me, because one of the small problems I have with the MASH box set is that there are no audio commentaries, even though when that DVD set was made, most of the cast was still around and crew was still around, and they could have been brought in to do commentary tracks. And so the idea that my show could be used for such a purpose is a huge compliment, so very much appreciated. The next review, 1 star, A Liberal's Take on MASH. Yes, thank you. By Bodice Shot. If you are into cancel culture, open borders, BOARDERS, and partial birth abortions, this is the podcast for you. Listen to it while you knock down statues and protest people's First and Second Amendment rights. Patreon.com/FW Podcasts. If you love MASH, 5 stars by Captain Entropy. You'll be hearing from him a couple times in this episode. If you love MASH, then you'll love this show. I consider them both sources of happiness, and I look forward to this show every week. Rob and his guests do a great job bringing out all the things I thought were cool about a scene or a line. Then they mention 4 things I didn't know or hadn't thought of that make me enjoy it even more. And if they miss anything, we listeners tell them about it in the comments on fireandwaterpodcast.com. Ain't that the truth? Give yourself a 3-day pass and binge listen to this show. Thank you, Captain Entropy. I really do appreciate it. That's a great review. And then we're going to wrap up with the best podcast there is, 5 stars, by Brown Coat Catet. I can't even begin to approach how brilliant this podcast is. Rob and every single guest that ventures in just take you back and just remind you how great the best show that ever was still is the best show that ever was. You know, it's something when you're just ready for the next episode at the end of the one you just experienced, kind of like MASH. Thank you so much, Brown Coat, and thank you, Captain Entropy. Thank you, Poiser. Not so much thank you, Bodderschnot. Thank you for those reviews. I really do appreciate it. Those are just tremendous, and they make me feel great. So thank you so much for the Apple Podcast reviews. And keep them coming, everybody. Even though the show's on hiatus after this until season 4, you can still leave reviews over on Apple Podcast. So all right, let's get to the mailbag. And starting way back with episode 49, the beginning of season 3, on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. Now, I wish I had the time to read more comments from any given episode, but I don't want to make this mailbag show too long. So we're going to just kind of hit the highlights. I'm going to list everyone that left a comment, and then I'm going to cherry pick 1 or 2 comments from any given episode. Please, I feel bad that I can't get into more, and I really do appreciate every comment that is left. I certainly read everyone. I'm not as good at responding to them on the website as some of the other Fire and Water all-stars are. Like Chris Franklin is truly an all-star at that. And it's not because I'm not interested, just because I'm so busy trying to get the episodes out that I don't have time to go back and respond to every comment on the website. But they really, really are appreciated. They mean a lot to me. And so presently, you're going to hear a lot of the same names over and over again because we have kind of the same commenters from episode to episode. But so it might get a little repetitive. I apologize for that, but I really want to make sure everyone gets mentioned. I really appreciate that anyone took the time to listen to the show and then go to the website and comment. So I want to make sure everybody gets mentioned in some form for the mailbag episode. So, okay, let's start with episode 49, The General Flipped Dawn, where my guest was Sean Myers. Got comments from Ryan Daly, Matt Sorois, Alan W. Wright, Chris Lewis, George W., Nick Vector, Santaron, Gord Tolton, Brian Linton, Ange, Little Russell Burbage, Steve Cloutier, Randall, Tim Price, Ward Hill Terry, and the aforementioned Chris Franklin, who says, great to have MASHcast back. I'm glad Rob mentioned Harry Morgan's work in support the support your local .. movies. Those were favorites in the Franklin household. Who doesn't love James Gardner or Harry Morgan? True enough, Chris. James Fritzell and Ever Greenbaum co-wrote many of the best episodes of the Andy Griffith together. Man, I really need to get on that Mayberry POD show. Again, true enough. Oh, and another obsession of mine, Dark Shadows, was constantly recasting actors as different characters. It was essentially a repertory company doing a show with a limited number of actors, just inhabiting different roles at different points in the show's run. That's an interesting idea. I didn't really thought about that. I've really never seen Dark Shadows, so it's just an interesting concept of doing a show with a troupe of actors, and you have to just keep reusing them over and over again. Thank you, Chris. For episode 50, MASHcast Rainbow Bridge, from my special guest star was Corey Drew. We've got comments from Ange, Sean Myers, Ryan Daly, Brian Linton, Little Russell Burbage, Tim Price, Bob W., Captain Entropy, and George W., who says, a big 180-degree turn from last week's silliness to the drama of this week. Not uncommon for this show. It did have some light moments with Henry ordering porn under pseudonym. Trapper quoting the facts about the Chinese guns is one of the biggest WTF moments on the show. Where did that come from? I didn't know that Mako was only on four times, as it seemed like a lot more. He was always good whenever he came on. Margaret giving Frank the gun didn't make any sense. What did she expect him to do against all that regular machine guns the Chinese would be carrying? I also thought that Mako's character was a little hypocritical about Frank having one small firearm when his men were packing major heat. I think I remember that movie, Major Heat. Frank's Pearl Harbor comment reminded me of Animal House. Another great episode. Thanks for keeping it going. Thank you, George W. Regarding Margaret, I always assume, you know, it's just bluster. It's just bluster. It's almost like a knee-jerk reaction. They were told, the Chinese said, you can't bring guns, then we're bringing a gun. And it doesn't even matter that Frank's gun was basically a pea shooter. It's just Margaret's in nature to resist what, you know, who she perceives as the enemy telling her what to do. Next up, MASHcast episode 51, Officer of the Day, where my special guest star was Captain Universe. We got comments from Danny Ulrich, Tim Price, George W., and Brian Linton, who says, thanks for the great discussion. I enjoyed hearing about how Captain Universe's father used teaching moments of MASH with her. My wife and I tried to do the same thing with our daughter, but when we try, we just get grunts and I know in response. Hopefully some of it still sinks in. I'd heard of the rule of three before, but I never noticed it at play in this episode. Well spotted, Captain. Finally, I wonder about Hawkeye's service as Officer of the Day in this episode. It seems like it's Hawkeye's first time in the position. Are there that many officers in the unit that Hawkeye has never had to serve as OOD before? Perhaps isn't it a duty that doctors normally perform, and Frank just assigned it to Hawkeye to punish him? It's entirely possible because they did establish that Henry was out of the camp at the time. I never thought about that, Brian. Thank you for pointing that out. For episode 52, Iron Guts Kelly with our special guest star, the late, great Zoom Yukinori. We got comments from Paul Wildenberger, Chris Franklin, Tim Price, George W., Nick Vector, and Little Russell Burbage, who says, damn it, Cripple Captain, this episode made me cry. It was one thing to hear Zoom's melodious tones and for you to dedicate this episode to him, but it really got me at the very end when Zoom talks about how the general needs a razzmatazz farewell, painfully ironic and funny at the same time. I never actually met him, but I miss him all the same. The guy was classy and funny. Great episode. Thanks. Yeah, co-signed to all of that, Russell. We never got a chance to meet Zoom. None of us did, unfortunately. We tried, but we just could not put it together, and I will always regret that because I would have loved to look him in the eye and shake the man's hand. He was a brilliant, brilliant person, funny, kind, and an incredible nerd. So it was an honor just to get to know him. Thank you, Russell. And then one other comment from Mike Gillis. He says, is every fictional character who shares a name with Rob Kelly a terrible blowhard? Not just fictional, Mike. Regarding episode 53, OR, the special guest star Dan Greenfield. We've got comments from Stan Peel, George W., Tim Price, and Ange, who says, that little trap line has McIntyre go and check on Frank feels very much real. In the ED, we have certain protocols for the most critically ill patients. When someone is put in there, doctors other than those providing primary care usually wander by to make sure the physicians in the room don't need extra help. In those times, there is a visual oral shorthand. The doc in the room can usually give a look that lets you know you aren't needed, but other times there is a glance or calling out of your last name that lets you know you need to get in there and help. That sort of teamwork only comes with time, but when you get there, it is incredibly potent. Like this episode, for all the reasons you say, I'm not comparing my job to a surgeon's in a MASH unit, but sometimes you have the intern who wants to do research with you in on a serious case, like Sydney at the bedside, and you are talking them through something just because you need another set of hands. Sometimes you have to say, we've done all we can here. I have come to appreciate MASH a lot more in my later years with the wisdom of my career for showing that. Thank you very much, Ange. I always appreciate hearing from you and your experiences as a doctor. They are really invaluable and very, very illuminating, so thank you. Regarding episode 54, Springtime, a special guest star, Danny Ulrich, comments from Ange, Chris Franklin, Danny Ulrich himself, Captain Entropy, George W., Randall, Santoron, and Captain Entropy, who says, Rob and Danny, I really enjoy listening to the two of you enjoy this fun episode. I always wondered if Radar lacked the vocabulary to explain what happened to him, at least in concise terms. Genuine weird nerd girl is a perfect description for a charming character, and one that explains why she seems so familiar. You probably know that Michelin is a French company. Maybe back then, the Americans pronounced the guide the correct way, even if they didn't bother with the tires. Maybe so. Another comment from Andrea A.J. Gall, who says, one of my favorite little details about the episode is that the cake has two brides on it. I don't think I've ever noticed that. I'll have to go back and look at that. What a great little detail. Thank you for providing that, Andrea. That's fantastic and very progressive of the MASH units in 1952 to do that. I always wonder, where did they even get those for a wedding cake anyway? regarding episode 55, Checkup, my special guest star is Russell Burbage. We got comments from Ange, Paul Wildenberger, Siskoid, Tim Price, George W., and Captain Entropy, who says, Ange and Paul, I think you're probably correct. When medicine advances or there's a shortage of people in a particular field, the military adjusts its medical standards much more quickly in the second case than in the first, usually. That is why the vision standard for pilot trainees is 20/20, unless we have a pilot shortage, and then it's 20/70 if it's correctable to 20/20 with glasses. It's also why we can have amputees with modern high-tech prosthetics serving in some physically demanding career fields. Of course, that's indicative of another interesting distinction. There are often different standards for the experienced people who spend a ton of money training. It'll take 10 years to make another Navy SEAL chief petty officer, so give that young man a prosthetic and a pair of glasses and let him get back into the fight if he still wants to go. Wow. That's a I didn't know any of that, Captain Entropy. Thank you. Chris Lewis says, let's be clear. The way that Hawkeye speaks and behaves towards Hot Lips during the examination is completely unacceptable. Regardless of their working or personal relationship at that moment in time, she is a patient seeking his medical opinion, and he is inappropriately flirtatious and disrespectful to the point of rudeness. That would be a disciplinary offense at the highest level of the profession in modern times and in my part of the world, UK. Even if Hawkeye avoided being struck off for this, there would be serious retraining and reprimands. Talking about weight issues, even to a genuinely obese patient, is almost always a sensitive and tricky subject. Given the obesity crisis in the Western world, doctors are arguably too squeamish about raising the topic. But Hawkeye's approach is a textbook example of how not to do it. Given Trapper and Hawkeye's prodigious alcohol intake, it's not surprising that at least one of them has an ulcer. From the sound effect of Trapper pouring his nasty martini into Frank's helmet, it sounded as though there was already quite a few discarded cocktails already in there, so perhaps his ulcer had been bubbling for a while. I don't know about the validity of picking up a stomach ulcer on X-ray, but I was surprised that it was described as 1.2 centimeters. I thought Americans were wedded to the imperial system. Are metric measurements usually routine for clinical findings? I had understood that surgery for stomach ulcers was commonplace until the 1970s, being superseded by drug treatments in the 80s. Not sure if it was something you could be drummed out of the army, though, for. And hernia examination is definitely two-glove examination, unless you're doing it during a pandemic where it's also a mask, gown, and goggles affair. Thank you, Chris. Again, I love hearing from doctors, especially in regards to stuff on MASH. So that's a fantastic insight, so thank you. Episode 56, Life with Father. Special guest star was Jeff Messer. Got comments from Captain Entropy, George W., Ange, Brian Linton, and Paul Wildenberger, who says, as always, I like to give the show a rewatch after listening to the podcast. I know the episode's well enough to follow along, but I like to pay attention to aspects Rob and his guests point out I may have missed. Here are some observations I made watching again. When Chim San approaches Frank and Margaret with the baby, Frank is very quick to get away. Margaret, on the other hand, wants to check on the child. This is another spot where her goodness is showing through, leading her to eventual transformation as a character. The exchange in the mess tent where Hawkeye, Trapper, and Mulcahy are greeting each other. They go from greeting one another to saying hello to the cast of the Jack Benny program, typical of the Jack Benny program itself. Father Mulcahy then says, "Hello, Mr. Benny," in a spot-on imitation of Dennis Day. I laugh every time I hear it, but then I get sad when I think of the younger viewers who don't understand that exchange at all. Not my teenage children, though. They've probably heard as many Jack Benny programs as they have seen episodes of MASH. Father Mulcahy talks about Captain Epstein and calls him Meshuggah. Growing up in a Lutheran home, we didn't have much occasion to speak Yiddish. It wasn't until high school that I finally understood that joke completely. I really like the conversation between Henry and Father Mulcahy, each talking about a woman in their lives but not really hearing one another. Do I know what you were saying? I'm sure a lot of people think this when they are speaking with Radar. Anyone impressed by Radar's impersonation of the Hebrew based on what he wrote down in Morse code? Maybe they coded it phonetically? After the brass, Hawkeye just casually takes a glass of wine to drink. It's a small thing, but fits the character. And you're right, Wayne Rogers did a great job mounting the horse. I just wonder what happened the first time. It seemed plainly obvious when he walked away from the horse to get a running start that they were going to film this mount in the same shot. There was an awkward cut, and then he just hops on. I'm assuming the horse moved, or Wayne Rogers was otherwise unsuccessful in that shot. I don't think I've noticed that. I think I mentioned in the episode that Wayne Rogers did a bunch of westerns before he ever came to MASH. So I would imagine he probably had some experience mounting horses, but maybe he wasn't good at it anyway. Regarding episode 57, Alcoholics Unanimous, my special guest star was Amanda Reyes. We got comments from Randall, George W., Chris Lewis, Tim Price, Captain Entropy, Ward Hill Terry, George W., Rob McCarthy, Brian Linton, who says, "Thanks for another excellent episode. As another Father Mulcahy fan, I have to agree that it is nice to see him getting more to do in these episodes. I hadn't really noticed before the special relationship that Mulcahy has with Klinger, but I like it. It almost looks like Klinger is serving as Mulcahy's verger, i.e. a layperson who helps the priest behind the scenes in the Anglican Church. I don't know if they have vergers in the Catholic Church. Regardless, I'll try and pay better attention to their relationship as we go forward. Finally, as much as I love Mulcahy's temperate sermon, it is hard to beat the scene with Trapper, Hawkeye, and Margaret drinking together in the swamp." True enough, Brian. Episode 58, "There is nothing like a nurse," special guest star Tim English. We've got comments from Brian Linton, Paul Wildenberger, George W., Tim Price, Captain Entropy, Tim English. There he is. And Ange, who says, "Great episode of MASH and great podcast. Just one comment. As I've said many times, my family watch MASH nightly on reruns. I started when relatively young. At one point, I asked my older brother, 'What happened to Captain Spaulding?' He said, 'Loudon Rainwhite died of a drug overdose.' I don't know if my brother was pulling my leg or actually thought this, but I took it as gospel. And here we are 3 decades later, and I still took it as gospel. I never looked at Loudon Wainwright on the internet. So I imagine how floored I was hearing that he is alive and well. I almost drove off the road. I was so shocked. The guy I thought had been dead, isn't." Wow. I don't know what to tell you, Ange. You gotta use up the internet sometimes. But yes, Loudon Wainwright III, alive and well. Episode 59, Adam's Ribs, with special guest star Dr. Ange and Dan Greenfield. You got comments from Chris Franklin, Brian Linton, George W., Paul Wildenberger, Santaran, who provided a shepherd's pie recipe, which I will not be trying, Little Bustle Burbage, Ward Hill Terry, Tim Price, and Captain Entropy, who says, "Rob, this is worth every minute. Genius idea to have 2 outstanding guests for this milestone episode. You're playing with the format just like MASH did. Ange, why ever would you think we would not want to hear all 9 of your funniest lines from the episode? I hope you covered them all. If you missed any, please post them in the comments on your next 10-minute break. The Alabama equivalent of Adam's Ribs is Dreamland Barbecue. They ship, too, as my dad found out on Father's Day. When I was a kid, Dreamland was a purple-painted cinder block with a screen door. It was in a lower-income section of Tuscaloosa, but there were plenty of BMWs and Mercedes in the unpaved parking lot. Tuscaloosa is the home of the University of Alabama, and I'll take this opportunity to send a hearty roll tide to the Auburn fans in the Long Box Crusade and White Rocket. I know they follow this network. Back then, every meal on the menu was some combination of ribs and generic white bread, differing only in amount and arrangement. You got paper towels with every order. Anyway, at least once a year I was in high school, there was an event that necessitated our travel to the university. We went to Dreamland every time. Once we waited in line for an hour. Little John was the host back then. His mom ran the place, and his dad, Big John, was the cook. It's Big John's picture on the logo. That time we had to wait so long, Little John made a path through the crowd to seat us at a table that was just about to be cleared. I saw that someone had left untouched ribs on this plate. I can only assume it was another trauma surgeon like Ange called away to a medical emergency. Anyway, as a growing teenage boy, I immediately started eating those ribs. Little John looked at me, shook his head, and said, "Boy, you're going to die." But I haven't yet. I think the sauce might be a disinfectant. 20 years later, I took a New Yorker to Dreamland. He said, "You know, when I ate the first one, I was okay. I didn't see what the big deal was. By the time I got to my sixth rib, I'd have chewed through concrete wall to get to my seventh. A pretty young woman who turned out to be Lil Jon's cousin sold us t-shirts. The family has since made Dreamland an empire. Back to MASH. There was always good supply people, but by the time I went into the military, they were much more universally mission-oriented. In the old days, it was sometimes, yes, I have three of those, but I give you one, then I won't have three for my inventory, as I think the incubator episode covered. As a military brat watching this, I knew enough how my dad's generation viewed supply that the scene with Sergeant Tirola was always my favorite. They were always those people, usually NCOs, who are absolute masters of their field and can't fathom that there were those without the faintest grasp of it. Sergeant Tirola was the perfect picture of that. Flabbergasted as he was at their ignorance of requisition paperwork, I think it made perfect sense to him that these knuckleheaded doctors would forget the coleslaw. Forgive us, we're draftees. It was my favorite line of all those gems because it was delivered such abject, repentant sheepishness. And people like Major Pfeiffer are absolutely real, by the way. When I was second lieutenant Entropy, I had tech sergeants who were my de facto supervisors, and that was entirely appropriate. If you're still so clueless and ineffectual as a major that the sergeant is actually making all the decisions, you are an exemplar of the Dilbert principle. Thank you. Thank you so much for that long story, Captain Entropy. You have to make that like the Dreamland podcast or something. There's some amazing stories there. Regarding episode 60, A Full Rich Day, my special guest star was Corey Drew. Got comments from Santaron, Chris Lewis, George W. Randall, Tim Price, and Brian Linton, who says, you touched on this in your discussion, but it struck me this time around that even though Hawkeye serves as our narrator, this really is Radar's Full Rich Day. I'd have to do another rewatch, but I think he might be the only character involved in all three of the episode storylines. I guess that's the price one pays for running a MASH unit. Thanks for another amazing episode. Thank you, Brian. I don't think I noticed that Radar does touch on all three storylines. That's interesting. Captain Entropy again says, Brian, your comment gave me an idea. I wish they had done a parallel episode, the same story, but told from Radar's perspective. We get to see all the trials he deals with completing Hawkeye or Trapper's instructions, like falling asleep at the wheel off screen. There might have been too many scenes where they were all together in this one, but it would work for a lot of them. I think Babylon 5 did an episode from the perspective of two maintenance techs that turned out well. Yeah, that's a fun idea. I mean, you could have done like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern kind of thing, but for MASH, like have one done from Roy Goldman's perspective or Sergeant Rizzo's perspective. I guess that would have been too far, but it would have been fun. Regarding episode 61, Mad Dogs and Servicemen, special guest star was Michelle Hubert. Got comments from M. King, Randall, Chris Franklin, Paul Wildenberger, George W., Captain Entropy, Brian Linton, Tim Price, Santaron, and Max Romero, my pal from the network, says, Michelle was a great guest, and it's great to hear that MASH can still appeal to a whole new generation. They'll talk about feeling old. I think I might be a few years older than her parents. Regarding the dog joke, it didn't bother me too much because I took it more as a hot dog joke than a eating dog gag, if that makes sense. Also, it's hard to fault the characters for an occasional dip into dark humor with what the average MASH doctor would see on a day-to-day basis. It'd be a natural pressure valve. I used to work in a daily newsroom, and it's an occupational hazard there too. When Radar did start transitioning from the slightly more crass and crafty Peeping Tom to the beloved, tender-hearted animal lover we came to know and love, was it pretty well established by this point? It was a good direction to take in which to take the character and a necessary soft spot in an often rough setting, so I'm guessing it was early on. While I'm thinking about it, what kind of farm did Radar's family run? He mentions animals once in a while, but it always seems to be as long-term pets more than livestock. I always like seeing Wayne Rogers get some good scenes to work with. I think Michelle hit on one of the reasons Trapper was always been one of my favorite MASH characters. He listens. He always seems to catch on to subtleties quickly, is often thoughtful, and certainly pays attention where Hawkeye is often ready to leap into the fray feet first. I still wish he'd be given more to do on the show, but at least we got BJ out of the deal. Yeah, agree to all that, Max. And yes, we, of course, we'll be handling BJ, the character, very, very soon on MASHcast. Regarding episode 62, Private Charles Lamb, my special guest star was Ken Holzhauer, and we got comments from Chris Franklin, Siskoid, Captain Entropy, Tim Price, Brian Linton, George W., and Santaron, who says, I'd like to point out that actually lobster was the proverbial last straw for me as far as becoming a vegetarian. I was a flexitarian, strongly leaning towards vegetarian to begin with. Social norms would have it that you must eat some meat, so I was doing the research on it before switching. Not as easy 20 years ago as today. Very true. But while living in Maine, I was going to a lobster dinner and realized how hard of a time I was going to have killing it. Then I thought, what difference does it make if I kill it or someone else does it? That's definitely going vegetarian. There's a lot there, Santaron, but I would argue, yes, being a vegetarian now is way easier than it was when I started, which was 1998. So, very, it's made it easier on everybody. Thank you. Thanks, world, for making it easier for vegetarians. Episode 63, Bond. My special guest star was Mike Jameson. We got comments from George W., Mick, Paul Wildenberger, Captain Entropy, Tim Price, Brian Linton, and Little Russell Burbage, who says, I always thought that there was a separate supply shed that kept the majority of stuff, excess blankets and boxes, and tongue depressors, etc. The room immediately off the post-op area was the supply closet, where the on-hand stuff was stored. I know that's in my office we have a supply room, and then an additional area in the warehouse for papers, folders, still in the boxes. So I always thought of it that way. Yeah, actually, that makes total sense, Russell, that there would be, of course, a major supply shed with all the stuff in bulk and then a closer closet for the stuff that you need more often. That makes complete sense, and I'm a little ashamed I didn't think of it, so thank you. Regarding episode 64, Bulletin Board, my special guest star was Dan Budnick. You got comments from Brian Linton, George W., little Lieutenant Russell Burbage, Tim Price, Dan Peel, Santoran, and Chris Franklin, who says, I always love it when Dan stops by the network. Me too, Chris. His energy always makes me smile. I really smile when I realize Dan knows who I am. Love you on Made for TV Mayhem, Dan. I'm off to check out that Happy Days podcast. And then Dan replies, Chris, I'm a fan of yours. Oh, this is getting sweet. I've been listening to your stuff for years now. Thank you. I'm glad you're enjoying the MFTV Mayhem. The three of us definitely have our charms. True enough, if you're not listening to the Made for TV Mayhem podcast, everybody go check it out. It's a lot of fun. It features both Dan Budnick and Amanda Reyes, who have been guests on this season of MASHcast. Episode 65 was The Consultant. My guest star was Chris Karam. We've got comments of Chris Franklin, Little Russell Burbage, George W., Tim Price, Brian Linton, Captain Entropy again, who says, great review, gentlemen. Now I'll exploit you for free therapy. So the thing that happens to Borelli, where he thinks he's fine right up until he isn't, it happens just like that. I probably didn't experience a tenth of what this fictional character would have gone through in two world wars, and there have been times where I needed a lot less in the way of a trigger. It was July 2016, almost a year after the last of my several combat zone deployments. My family had gone to a reunion in the mountains without me because I had a spiffy new civilianish job and no accrued time off. That was fine, of course. For a week, the whole house would be my man cave. Then my daughter's cat got really sick, and I was off to the animal emergency room in the middle of the night. While I waited as the veterinarian performed tests that would yield no good news, I made small talk with the young vet tech sitting at the reception counter. Something one of them was wearing or saying tipped the other one off that he was in the military. I don't remember what. We started with the usual list of questions. Branch, career field, where you served, where you deployed, etc. Turned out he was an Intel Marine who had deployed to Al-Anbar province in Iraq, specifically Fallujah, I think, and Helmand province in Afghanistan. He saw my face fall when he said the place names. I think that I told him I would know a little bit about what he was talking about. Then our conversation was off and running. He told me about losing his battalion commander in Iraq and the effect that it had on his unit. He told me about the IEDs in Helmand and how they were able to identify new threats and new enemy tactics in the area and share the intel with others. He also told me how he volunteered to leave the forward operating base and go on more combat missions because he couldn't handle staying behind while he sent friends out and had them come back as casualties. He told me more stuff than I am fine with not remembering. He just wanted to process it with somebody who would get it because it helps to do that every so often. I was happy to listen because others have done the same for me and my experiences were far less difficult than his. Then the vet came out with the bad news about my daughter's awesome cat and the Marine and I parted ways. I drove the cat home, full on ugly crying in the car about the loss of this young man had experienced and the less significant loss my family soon would. The realization for me was I thought I was okay, that I'd processed everything I would need to and I was back to normal. A couple years later, the first job had led right into the next one. I was still working as contracted support for the same military command, but a different division. We had scheduled a meeting with the military officer about a plan we needed his help with. When he showed up, he and I realized we had been deployed together, overlapping for a few months in Western Afghanistan. We hadn't worked closely together, but we had some mutual friends. After business was out of the way, we started talking about old times, how this op and that one had been looked from our perspectives, respective supporting roles, telling each other the parts of the story we didn't already know. We eventually got to ops that went wrong and the people that we lost, and we each ended the meeting more somber than we started it. Two of the folks in my office noted the change in demeanor. They started chatting with me about how they processed it when something like this came up. Watching this war movie, reading this veteran's poetry, and oh yeah, drinking, but not too much. We actually laughed about the dreams I could look forward to that week. The lesson I took from these experiences and others was that I would never be the same person I was before going to war. but I eventually decided that didn't mean it wasn't okay. Hearing about sacrifice and loss or the hardship and trauma that people living in a war zone experience affects me more deeply now, but I can still function just fine. Those things are more powerful to me because my understanding of them is deeper and more real. So I'm calling it a feature, not a bug. I hope Hawkeye and Borelli came to similar conclusions. Thank you, Captain Entropy. Really appreciate that comment. MASH episode 66, House Arrest. My special guest star was Dr. Ange. We got comments from Daniel Hopmans, Randall, Captain Entropy, George W., Brian Linton, Tim Price, Wardhol Terry, Little Russell Burbage, and Robert J. Smith, who says, this episode makes me sorry for Frank Burns, and I hate Frank Burns. I'm not sure why I hate him. I love Ted Baxter, Dan Feeling, and other classic workplace sitcom jerks, but I've despised Burns since I was a child. So here he gets punched because Hawkeye absurdly escalates a situation that Hawkeye himself initiated by needlessly insulting Margaret. Then he's sexually assaulted and finds himself accused of rape by his assaulter. I just can't enjoy an episode that makes me sympathize with Major Burns. Interesting observation, Robert. Burns is terrible, but he's kind of gets put through the ringer in that episode. From MASHcast episode 67, Aid Station, my special guest star was Tim Price. We got comments on George W. and Captain Entropy and Little Russell Burbage, who says, this is another one of my favorites, and I think I like it partly because of the dichotomy of the featured players being three actors who stayed the entire 11 years. I wonder, was this a case of the chicken or the egg? If Wayne Rogers had been featured in the episode or more like these instead of Alan Alda, would he have stayed? As others said, Klinger was great here. Clearly, the producers had decided Jamie Farr was worth getting on full-on contract instead of being a day player. And at the end, I think they used Father McKay instead of Klinger because this was another follow-up officers' meeting. Klinger was not an officer. Father McKay, he wasn't a lieutenant, wasn't he? Yes, he was, and that made him an officer. So that's true, Russell. It's an interesting observation. Probably correct. Regarding episode 68, Love and Marriage, my special guest star was Paul Wildenberger. Got comments from George W., Tim Price, Brian Linton, Andre A.J. Gall, and Little Russell Burbage again, who says, this is my favorite third season episode because it divides up relatively equally between Trapper and Hawkeye in a way that so many 1-3 seasons episodes didn't. Although I do agree with Paul that I would have preferred less of Radar. Maybe with a better edited scene, would have gotten some wisdom and advice from, say, Father Mulcahy. I echo the opinion that MASH should have had a recurring cast of local supporting characters. That would have given the show an even deeper sense of time and place, I think. Besides that, though, I would have liked to have seen more episodes featuring other people in the outfit, like Zale and McShane, and yes, Igor and Dennis and Goldman. It's a shame that it took MASH 10 years to get around to writing an episode about Nurse Kelly. I think one of the less successful parts of MASH is its lack of well-rounded supporting characters. This is a characteristic of TV shows that we've really gotten used to because of shows like Hill Street Blues, The West Wing, ER, etc. MASH really did stick to kind of its core characters with just a couple of side characters, unlike something like the shows you mentioned or The Simpsons, which has this, you know, huge surrounding universe. That was something that it more of a modern TV invention. Would have been interesting to get more of the greater world of MASH. Episode 69, Big Mac. My special guest star was Chuck Coletta. We got comments from Randall, Brian Linton, Little Russell Burbage, Captain Entropy, Tim Price, and Ange, who says, as a huge fan of What's Up, Doc, Graham Jarvis will always be the bailiff in the courtroom at the end. Always like seeing it pop up here and there. And I'm still stunned when Loudon Rainwhite is brought up here. You might recall I grew up my whole life thinking he wasn't on the show because I thought he had died. Thanks, older brother, for the misinformation. It was here in MASHcast I learned he's alive and well. My life had been a lie before. I know we covered this just a couple of comments ago, but I just still find that so funny. I just love that Ange just went his whole life thinking somebody was dead while the internet was available to them this whole time. It's just very, very funny. Ange, you're spending too much time doing medicine and not looking up musicians on the internet. Episode 70 was Payday. My special guest star was Kevin Lauderdale. We got comments from Captain Entropy, Little Russell Burbage, Tim Price, Nick Vector, Rob McCarthy, who says, quite possibly Hawkeye knows Superman because there had been a radio show, two serials, and the anime shorts, and everybody in MASH watches tons of movies. That's good observation, Rob. And then we got a comment from George W. who says, Radar taking Hawkeye seriously and submitting the invoice was the strangest part of the story. And why would anyone approve one for that much without checking it out? If I had to cast a role for a character named Eldon Quick, I would hire Eldon Quick. He just looks like an Eldon Quick. Say what you will about how Frank treats his wife. He did buy her a $1,500 pearl necklace, although I wouldn't trust a peddler with something that expensive. Maybe Trapper didn't leave a note when he left because he was still mad at Hawkeye about the poker money. In the later episodes where everyone is swapping out the job of charity collector, Father Mulcahy sets up camp right by the mess line until he finds out it cuts into his orphanage fund. So this episode theme gets used in another episode. I guess someone had to hand out the money, so the officers have to take turns. Frank does the payroll in the episode where Hawkeye dies. I know that they make the officers do it, but it still just doesn't make a lick of sense to me that the doctors would have to do that. For God's sakes, get somebody else to do it. But anyway, episode 71, White Gold. My special guest star was Britt Schramm. And we got comments from Captain Entropy, Tim Price, Little Russell Burbage, George W. Ange, Andre A.J. Gall, Chris Lewis, who says, great episodes and welcome, Britt. Your first podcast is really enjoyable. Medical Corner 1. Hawkeye and Trapper are strapping up Perkins' chest, which was a common treatment for a fractured rib, although Trapper clearly says there are no broken bones. Strapping is not performed now, as it's thought that overtight bandages can prevent the chest from fully expanding, which increases the risk of a chest infection developing. However, I think strapping the chest still would have been normal practice in both the Korean War and in the 1970s when the show was filmed. As to the correct length of the bandages, I suspect Trapper likes the longer length, as it will stretch further and give a bit more traction to the painful area. I like that there's a discrepancy between Hawkeye and Trapper's individual practice and that there's some good-natured banter about what's the best approach. Almost all clinicians will have their own quirky preferences about how to best do something, and trust me, I've been party to some heated, real-life discussions about correct approach to a problem that were far less civil than Trapper's dark mutterings. 2. What did they give Flag to mimic appendicitis? The textbook symptoms of appendicitis are evolving pain in the lower right part of the abdomen, although confusingly the pain can move around as it develops, fever, nausea, and vomiting, and loss of appetite. Hawkeye says that Flag had abdominal cramps and his whole side is inflamed, enough to make his gun hot. That's odd, as the inflammation with appendicitis is internal, causing peritonitis. I'm going to put that comment down to Hawkeye's Groucho-like sense of humor. Obviously, pain, fever, cramping, and inflammation are all symptoms we want to cure, not cause, so these symptoms would be considered adverse effects of a drug. There are a few modern immunosuppressant, you know what I'm saying, drugs that would cause all these effects, but nothing that would be contemporary with the war or even the show's production. I'm going to suggest that what the boy slipped into Flag's coffee was some sort of powerful laxative that would cause horrible bowel cramping, and that they falsely confirmed the other symptoms. Perhaps that's why Flag seems to doubt the veracity of their diagnosis, as he fails to go under the anesthetic for the umpteenth time. And it goes without saying that it's all highly unethical, of course. There's a well-known phrase in medicine, first do no harm. It's actually not part of the Hippocratic Oath, but it's definitely violated by Hawkeye and Trapper, even if it is for the greater good. And now my bucket list is complete, at least the lexical portion. The network has done so much for me. Thank you, Chris. I always appreciate, again, as I said, between you and Ange, I love all the Medical Corner stuff. Keep them coming. And then finally, final episode of the season, episode 72, Abyssinia Henry, special guest star Scott X. We got comments on Mike Bridges, Chris Franklin, George W., Rob McCarthy, Mick Jameson, Gore Tolton, Little Russell Burbage, Brian Linton. And I got a couple of comments I'm going to read from this historic episode. First is from Matt Sirois, who says it's one of the most powerful gut punches in television history. I got a little misty-eyed just listening to your synopsis of the episode. This climax was already well known by the time I started watching MASH. It makes several of the earlier episodes tougher to watch with the knowledge that Henry will never make it home to his family. MASH was always brilliant television, and somehow it always managed to continue to outshine itself. And says, a complete gut punch. Again, with the everyone uses the phrase gut punch. I don't remember the first time I saw this, but I can remember as a kid thinking maybe they were wrong about him dying. As an adult, you understand why. Now that I am entrenched in my profession, I do like to point out when MASH does things right. Of course, this team only has a moment to digest the news of Henry before going about business as usual in the OR. There are a bunch of patients on the table. You can't stop what you're doing and deal with your emotions right then and there. I hate to equate a war hospital to an ER, but there have been times that something jarring and dramatic has happened in the first hour of my shift. But I have to put my head down and work the next 8, thinking only of the new patients before I can mull over what happened before. In this, MASH gets it right. But now, in my old years, I wonder if Radar did everyone a disservice by announcing it then. I wonder if it could have been better if he told everyone after all the wounded were cared for. Certainly, the death of a beloved colleague is going to be on everyone's mind as they deal with the casualties. Maybe it would have been better to tell everyone later so they had the emotional space, could hug each other and cry and deal with it on their own terms. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Angie. The one, like, kind of like no prize I want to do for myself is obviously they had to do it. For that reason, for the dramatics of that no one could react the way, nobody could, rend their garments and cry uncontrollably. But maybe, if I really want to be kind, maybe that was the end of a session and, everyone was down to their last patient. And that's when Radar got the news and thought, well, they're all done. I have to announce it. As opposed to maybe in an episode like OR or coming up in the season four, Deluge, where patients are just flooding in and it would be inappropriate. Maybe it was right at the end of a shift in OR, maybe even a relatively easy shift in OR, and Radar just didn't think to to give them another 10 minutes or something like that. Gene Hendricks leaves a comment. He says, as everyone has said, this was a very powerful episode, and it hit pretty close to home for my family. In fact, I'm pretty sure my dad would never watch this episode if it came on. My uncle Gene, for whom I am named, enlisted in the Air Force during Vietnam when he found out that his parents had taken out a loan in order to pay for his college education. Hey, it was the 60s. He intended to do his tour and then come back and finish school on the GI Bill. 10 days before he was scheduled to come home, he was part of the flight crew on a plane that crashed due to engine failure while transporting soldiers to R&R. My dad has told me about this, told me that this is the incident that killed my grandmother. Although she lived to see my sister and I born, she was never the same. Every time I hear Radar reading the telegram, all I can think of is the Air Force telegram that my grandparents got telling them that their oldest son was dead. And then Gene provides a link for more about his uncle. You can go to honorstates.org, and then there is a specific link where you can learn more about Gene's uncle. And I followed that link, and it was very interesting reading. So thank you very much, Gene. Robert J. Smith says, powerful episode. Does anyone else find it interesting that Wayne Rogers went on to play a doctor in another sitcom based on a movie? Meanwhile, the character of Trapper John got his own show where he's played by Pernell Roberts, another actor famous for abruptly leaving a successful running show. Both good observations, Robert. Yes, of course, he's referring to House Calls with Wayne Rogers and Lynn Redgrave, which I only think lasted 2 or 3 seasons. It wasn't a huge hit. I think there was more behind-the-scenes stuff that brought it down. But yes, Wayne Rogers has played a doctor in a couple of shows. And yeah, I always Amanda Reyes does the Trapcast, which is all about Trapper John MD. And I watched that show just for the MASH connection. And I would get so thrilled when they would even make an offhanded mention to his time in Korea. I was just so like, oh, it was a MASH reference. And once in a while, I think they mentioned Hawkeye. And it was they probably only mentioned MASH like once every 3 seasons, but I loved it as a kid. And then finally, commenting-wise on this episode, Tim Price says, I was about 7 when this originally aired, and I honestly can't remember if I saw it then or if I understood the significance at that time. But I do clearly remember watching it in reruns starting high school and just feeling my heart sink. Radar's face during the last scene is unforgettable. Wow. Now, as usual for my crazy memory, I think I did see that skit on Cher's show when it aired. I can really picture it stronger from my imagination. It wouldn't surprise me because my folks enjoyed sketch comedy musical shows like that, Sonny and Cher, Smothers Brothers, Dinah Marie, even Shudder, The Bradys. I can't remember it perfectly, but enough to picture it, another wow. Congrats on finishing the season, Rob. Go schedule some R&R in Tokyo after the mailbag episode. Yes, Tim, I will be doing that. Okay, well, that is all the comments from season 3. Thank you, everybody. As I said, I really do appreciate every comment that comes in on the website, and I do read them all. I'm sorry that I don't have time to read more of them here on the show. This episode's getting long enough, but I really do appreciate it, and I read everyone that comes in. So thank you so much. So now, regarding season 3, as I do at the end of every season, I'm going to rank the episodes from my least favorite to my most favorite. Again, these aren't necessarily qualitative. I'm not saying some are better than others, but these are just sort of my favorites. And I think eventually when we get to the end of season 11, I will make a list of all 251 or something and do a master list. But for right now, we're just doing season by season. So let's get on to it. So again, I'm going to start with my least favorite episode to my most favorite episode. So let's get into it. So season 3, least favorite, Mad Dogs and Servicemen, Life with Father, Private Charles Lamb, Springtime, Bombed, A Full Rich Day, Payday, Aid Station, Bulletin Board, White Gold, The Consultant, Checkup, Alcoholics Anonymous, Love and Marriage, House Arrest, Big Mac, There's Nothing Like a Nurse, Rainbow Bridge, The General Flipped at Dawn, Iron Guts Kelly, OR, Officer of the Day, Adam's Ribs, and Abyssinia Henry. I almost said that Adam's Ribs and Abyssinia Henry are tied, but that's cheating. I really feel like you can't have ties. You got to rank them. You got to just do the hard work and rank them. The fact that those two, to me, my favorite two episodes of the season are so completely polar opposites of each other says something about how good MASH was in season 3. And basically, when you get down to around the midway point of these 24, they're almost interchangeably how good they are. Principally starting around Alcoholics Anonymous, every episode to me is a masterpiece, is a classic. That's how good season 3 was. So it was hard ranking them, but at the same time, it almost doesn't matter because they're all just so good. And in terms of pure fun, I would say I enjoy watching Adam's Ribs much more than Abyssinia Henry, obviously, but Abyssinia Henry is just so absurdly brilliant that I don't know how I would rank it as anything other than the best episode of season 3. So your mileage may vary, everybody. So now I'm going to move on to a couple of emails I got. The show does get some regular emails, but I don't necessarily want to read them on the air until I know someone It's okay with someone. And so if it is okay to read comments on the air, please let me know. You can use the contact form on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. And if you can clearly state that this is okay to mention on the show, then I'll know that I can use it for season 4 mailbag or something like that. So let me get to the couple of comments that I do have. First one is from Danny Ulrich, who says, I just wanted to share my thoughts and feelings for the end of season 3. As I stated on my first appearance on MASHcast, the first 3 seasons are near and dear to my heart as it made me fall in love with the show. I do not remember if I heard or read about Henry's death before I watched it, but that scene still brings a tear to my eye. My favorite Henry episodes are The Trial of Henry Blake, especially from my favorite line of Meg Craddy, "This is a sample of Henry Blake's work with the pregnant Korean woman." Dear Dad 3 for Henry's own movie. Finally with Abyssinia Henry. Honorable mention for sometimes you hear the bullet for that line. Next, I want to sing the praises of Trapper John. Well understood why Wayne Rogers left. I do feel the writers could have given more to do, but again, I'm not sure if the show would have grown into the classic that it would have become had the cast in the show not changed. Would have lasted 11 seasons, be the classic it is today? My top 3 for Trapper John are Kim, 5 O'Clock Charlie, and Ceasefire. My thanks to you and all your wonderful guests, hosts from the past year. Can't wait to talk about season 4 with you. So I'll just wait for the film and water commentary of the cat from outer space. Make mine MASHcast. Thank you, Danny. That's great. Yes, we will be getting to a movie tonight episode at some point on the cat from outer space, since there's so many MASH connections in that episode. And then I got a comment from David Mann, who says, hello, Rob. I emailed you a couple of months ago regarding my desperate attempt to get caught up on the podcast, along with my friendship with Everett Greenbaum. I'm now in the middle of season 3, and I have a few observations. Regarding the episode OR and Frank's mistake with the kidney, I'm in my 50s and found out only a couple of years ago that I was born with only one. Unless a person has had some sort of scan in their life, they would never know. I'm old enough to have watched and recorded on VCR the PBS MASH documentary that was made during the final years of the show. In it, Larry Gelbart mentioned that the Dear Dad episodes and shows like it came about because Gelbart's wife asked him why there was only one event happening each week in the camp. He took that as a challenge to write episodes that dealt with multiple storylines. So they probably were not compilations of story ideas that were too short for a full episode. Sorry. The two antenna towers in the hills are actually visible in every episode of MASH. In the opening credits, when Hawkeye is scrunched down and moves towards the helicopter, the two towers are just above his head. Keep up the great work, David Mann. Thank you, David. No, that's a great bit about Larry Gelbart. As much as, you know, sometimes the show is just me winging it, and I'm okay with that. I want the show to be correct. I don't want to make observations that are not right. So that's good to know that the Dear Dad shows were not sort of hodgepodges of cast-off storylines, that they were intentionally written that way. So thank you very much for that information. And then we have one last comment, but this is an audio comment. We got something in from Mick Jameson, and he has some comments about Abyssinia Henry. As I mentioned, if you wanted to submit something regarding that episode in audio form, you could do that. So Mick was kind enough to send something in. He has a few comments about that episode and MASH in general. So we're going to play that right now, and then I'll join you on the other side.
Hey Rob, it's Mike Jamison here. I just wanted to share some thoughts with you about the episode and what the episode means to me and what this podcast means to me. I am an essential worker, so I've been working during the pandemic, and I listen to most of the shows on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, my favorite being MASHcast, because my favorite show of all time is MASHcast, and also because I've been on the show. And I've taken up, because of Fire and Water Geek Fitness, trying to keep up with my health, even during a time of not being able to go to the gym. So while I'm at work, at the end of the day, I usually walk 2 miles and take that time to listen to various podcasts, and I listen to the Abyssinia Henry podcast on my 2-hour walk. And, you know, this is an episode that I've seen countless times over the last almost 40 years, that I've read about, that I've talked about, and still on my walk outside, listening to you describe the episode and then talk about the episode, I had goosebumps. You know, I could feel the hair rising on my arm, just thinking about the episode and just thinking about what it meant, not over only to television history, but to MASH history. So I just wanted to say it was a great episode, and not only of the show, but of the podcast. Thank you for the podcast. Hopefully I'll get to talk to you again on the podcast. And hopefully the podcast won't be gone too long. Thanks again, and thank you to all the creators and actors and behind-the-scenes people of MASH for making it the greatest television series ever. Talk soon.
Thank you so much, Mick. I really do appreciate I enjoyed talking to you this season. Of course, we've done other podcasts together, and I very much, again, appreciate you sending that comment in, and thanks for the kind words on MASHcast, and look forward to talking with you later on as the show progresses. Speaking of which, it is now officially time to announce season 4. The queue list is starting. I've basically been holding off telling people that I'm not going to be reserving episodes yet because I don't want people to – I don't want the whole season 4 to get filled up before I make the official announcement. So this is the official announcement. If you would like to be a guest on season 4, please use the contact form on our website, findwaterpodcast.com, and go to the contact tab and use the form. And please, in the subject matter, please at the top put in MASHcast season 4 and list up to three episodes from season 4 that you would like to talk on. I'm going to try and maybe do some, like I did with Adam's Rib, some double episodes so I can work more people into the show. That was a very popular show, and that was really fun to record with both Dan and Ange. MASH as a show did some format busting in season 4, so I'm going to try and maybe do some of that in MASHcast. So I'm going to do my best to get everybody involved. So if you want to be on MASHcast season 4, and I know you do because it's a very popular season of the show, I still say it is the single greatest, not only the single greatest season of MASH, it is the single greatest season of television, period. I know everyone's going to be involved in it, and I'm going to do my best to get everyone included who wants to be included. So again, go to the website, findwaterpodcast.com, use the contact form, and I will get back to you as soon as possible regarding season 4. So the official announcement has been made. Pretend you're hearing Radar horribly blowing his trumpet right now. So that is going to do it, finally, for MASHcast Season 3. Of course, if you want to talk MASH, or it's over on we're always doing it over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can follow it on the website, the aforementioned findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And then finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to season-wide support from Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Dolph DeVries, and Britt Schramm. Really, really appreciate it, guys. It is very, 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 very rewarding for someone to list one of my shows as the show they want to get name checked on when they support us on Patreon. It really means the world to me. So thank you so much for the season 3 support. So again, that's going to do it for season 3. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the commenting. Thank you for the retweeting. Thank you for the iTunes reviews. Just thank you all around just for listening to the show. I really, really do appreciate it. So that's going to do it. And so until season 4, that is all.
MASH will continue.